Chapter 6. If there was one thing upon which Ben could commend the Naboo, it was their flair for hospitality. While the guest room that had been prepared for him in the royal palace was furnished with the sumptuous fabrics and vibrant colors favored by Theed's noble houses, here and there were little nods to Alderaanian tradition. A vase of ginger bells on the dresser, muskwood in the fireplace, a bottle of emerald wine in the oak-paneled conservator. It was a shame that he had no time to savor any of it. The meeting with Vistrala had lasted a while, and even though Ben had showered, shaved, and dried his hair at lightning speed, there were only a handful of minutes left to spare before the parade began. Standing in front of the full-length mirror, he hurriedly donned the clothes from Typhnu Dotsa's shop. Not bad for an 11th-hour selection, even if they were a touch more embellished than what he normally preferred. Like the trousers, the suit jacket was made from the same blue shag hane, so dark it was almost black, with embroidered silver cuffs that matched the ornate high collar of the ivory-hued shimmer silk shirt he wore. Completing the ensemble was a wide-shouldered Veda cloth cloak shot through with silver gem web to create the illusion of a starry night sky. There was a knock on one side of the door that connected his room to Ray's.
"Come in,"
he called, preoccupied with adjusting the cuffs of the suit. The door creaked open and she suffused the air. He didn't know how to explain it. She had such a bright light in the force that he was hyper aware of her presence, even if she wasn't in his direct line of sight.
"You and I have a big problem, kid,"
he thought wryly as he turned away from the mirror, head bent over his right sleeve.
"Are you all set?"
he inquired. "Yes." He looked up, and his heart caught in his throat. Ray's gown was made of the same ivory material as his dress shirt, and Ben wondered fleetingly if this had been intentional on the couturier's part. While she was completely covered by the high neckline and the long sleeves that ended in diamond points past her wrist, the bodice was skin-tight, cut up by an intricate gold band accentuating the curve of her waist, before flaring out into yards and yards of shimmer silk. In stark contrast to her fancy attire, her face was simply scrubbed clean. Although she had foregone her usual three buns to sweep her hair into a neat twist at the back of her head. And even though the gown had been designed to catch the eye, it was her bare features that he kept coming back to. She'd gone from cute to dazzlingly gorgeous in a matter of days, and he couldn't figure out how that had happened. Was there something in the water on Naboo? She was staring at him in much the same way he was staring at her. Upon realizing that, Ben was spurred into action. He closed the distance between them in measured strides, placing his hands on her slim shoulders, leaned down to kiss her on the forehead. "Senator," she murmured in a low, conflicted voice that contained a wealth of immeasurable sadness.
"You called me Ben earlier in the holding cell," he said gruffly, cupping her cheek, stroking the pad of his thumb over her freckles. "I much prefer that, I think."
But she stepped away, shaking her head. "We're going to be late." She turned to lead him out into the corridor, and he discovered that, as if to compensate for its conservative front, her gown was backless, revealing an expanse of creamy skin all the way to her lumbar spine. A few inches lower, and that magnificent little derriere would have been revealed to him in all its glory.
"Dameron was wrong,"
Ben groused as he fell into step behind Ray.
"It's not Finn. I am the unluckiest man in the galaxy."
As was the case with events of a similar nature on most other worlds, the parade was an opportunity for the Naboo to gawk and gossip about their elected officials. There were a smattering of Gungans present, but for the most part, the planet's other dominant species dismissed the Festival of Light as a human affair. It was, after all, Theed, and not Otto Gunga, that had joined the Republic hundreds of years ago. However, in keeping with the customary show of good faith, Boss Marsune had sent the great municipal band to herald Queen Vistrala and the other members of government in a procession of vehicles and floats that wove down Main Boulevard and Pergola's Bridge and the Street of Glory before passing beneath the triumphal arch that trisected the wide avenue known as Palace Plaza. Ben and the other dignitaries were waiting to receive Vistrala on the overlook stage, a circular marble-paved terrace rimmed with stone balustrades. It was tradition for one of the assembled senators to escort the queen to the podium, symbolizing the Republic welcoming Naboo into its fold. Right before the ceremony started, Ben had been informed by a harried protocol droid that he had the honor this year. When he stepped forward with his arm extended to Vistrala, an enthusiastic cheer rose from Theed's noble families, soon picked up by the other spectators. It was too warm to be mere politeness, and so a confused Ben's gaze flickered to the crowd. He saw a sea of smiling faces, the more wrinkled ones wet with tears, as the banners of House Nibiri waved proudly in the air. And then he understood. "She was our greatest monarch," Vistrala told him, slipping her hand into the crook of his elbow. "We remember her as the champion of democracy until the very end. When she died, Naboo's love for her cemented her place in our legends. Even when the truth came out almost a decade ago, we rallied behind your mother. For how could we forget that, in the days of the Galactic Civil War, our soldiers went into battle with Padme Amidala's name on their lips?" The orchestra struck up a new melody as Ben led Vistrala to the podium. It was Tialga Hath Fallen, a traditional Alderaanian composition about a warrior queen who made a stand against impossible odds. Leia Organa should have been here, Ben thought, but she was off fighting, trying to save the galaxy once more. This time, he resolved to give her whatever help he could. 902 years ago, Naboo joined what we now call the Old Republic, and to this day we are proud to consider ourselves part of the new one that rose in its stead. Vistrala's regal tones rang out from the podium on the overlook stage beneath the dark indigo sky. "The Festival of Light is a happy occasion for our homeworld as we celebrate peace and intergalactic cooperation. But it is also a time to reflect on that troubled era in our history when we were unable to celebrate it all, cast as we were in the shadow of the Empire. Today, I must also request a moment of silence for Senator Talik Yar and Senator Kavarm Gia, who were assassinated on their way to Theed." As everyone else bowed their heads in respect, Ben chanced a glance over his shoulder. Ray was an unmoving silhouette in the alcove behind the stage, deep in a meditation trance that would allow her to detect any danger. She was also scanning the assembled crowd, Ben knew, for signs of treachery. While Finn had been unable to provide any names, he'd confirmed that there were First Order collaborators everywhere, in Naboo as well as the rest of the Republic. Not only that, but there was a double agent in the Resistance, someone who must have presumably been listening in on the transmission from Varrakeno in order to give Finn's squad the information that Ben and Rey would be traveling via the Lake Country route. Vistrala resumed speaking, and Ben exhaled in relief at her next words. He'd been afraid that she would change her mind at the last minute. "This afternoon, I received definitive proof that Senators Yar and Gia were killed by an organization calling itself the First Order." The hushed silence of the crowd was so thick it could have been cut with a knife. The collaborators' pulses would be accelerating, drops of cold sweat beating down their spines, or so Ben liked to think, wishing for a moment that he was trained enough to be sensing all of this in the Force, as Rey undoubtedly was now. "Operating out of the unknown regions, this military junta seeks to destroy the Republic and all that we hold dear. Their goal is a return to the Dark Days, when all inhabited solar systems cowed in fear under an oppressive, tyrannical regime." Whispers and mutters rippled throughout the audience like wildfire, the myriad of holo cameras surrounding the stage hovering closer to zoom in on Vistrala's face, broadcasting her speech to every corner of the galaxy. "I ask you, my people, my honored guests, will we allow it?" Ben had been counting on the patriotic fervor that normally spiked to an all-time high at celebrations like this. He had been counting on the senators who had been friends with Yar and Gia to want justice, and perhaps vengeance.
Most of all, he'd been counting on the fact that people would realize that the Queen of Naboo would not risk her political career and her homeworld stability by making such an incendiary announcement at such an important event unless she knew that it was the absolute, irrevocable truth. The gamble paid off. When the first impassioned chorus of, "No!" in response to Vistrala's question started, it originated from Ben's fellow senators, many of whom had met Leia's claims with skepticism. Vistrala continued. "Will we allow our hard-won democracy to be taken from us yet again? Will we allow these destabilizers, these cowards, these imperial fanatics to do as they please?" More cries of, "No!" steadily increasing in volume and ire. Like any good stateswoman, Vistrala drew from her rapt audience's energy, hitting her stride as she declared, "There are thousands of old battlefields littered with the bones of those who never made it home. There are regions of space through which float the debris from countless ships whose crews knew they were outmatched but fought anyway. This republic of ours was built on blood and sweat, on tears and sacrifice. Will we allow all of that to be in vain?" "No, no, no!" from the politicians gathered behind Vistrala on the Overlook stage, from spectators on the repulsor platforms, from the streets of Theed where people were watching the Queen's address on vid screens, until it seemed like the defiant cries filled the world and the sky above it. "Then let this year's Festival of Light be a message of our resolve in the face of this new threat," Vistrala concluded. "Let the record show that, as early as now, Naboo is taking a stand and inviting our allies to stand with us against terror and in defense of freedom." She paused, as if gauging the atmosphere to determine how her next words would be received. And what she saw and felt made her say, "May the Force be with us." In the days of the Rebel Alliance, that was a battle cry. Here and now, judging from the way the crowd roared, well, it was very much the same. Vistrala left the podium, and that was the signal for the orchestra to play and the fireworks to begin. The joyous, vibrant swell of "All Stars Burn as One," dazzling explosions of multicolored light unfurled above the palace. They blazed and spiraled against a backdrop of glittering constellations, taking on the shape of birds and flowers and crosses and comets and other Republic emblems before vanishing into wisps of smoke. While similar displays would continue to illuminate the skies all over the city for the rest of the night, this one lasted for 30 minutes, and Ben didn't see much of it. As soon as the formal proceedings came to an end, right after Vistrala's speech, he went over to Rey in the alcove. They stood side by side, her magnificent eyes raised to the heavens in wonder, shards of jeweled light dancing over her face in shifting veils, and he found himself looking at her instead of the firework. Taking advantage of the balmy weather, the after-party for visiting dignitaries was held in the royal gardens, which were picturesque, almost magical, in the glow of Naboo's three moons and the near-constant flare of pyrotechnics in the distance. The air was suffused with the powdery fragrance of Romanaria flowers, and a live band performed on the marble gazebo while guests milled about the expansive courtyard, nibbling on appetizers and drinking wine. Some took the time to marvel at the lush exotic blooms, the sparkling fountains, and the artificial waterfall that mimicked the ones cresting over the cliffs beyond the palace walls. But mostly people were breaking off into small groups and discussing in low tones what to do about the First Order. The more prominent centrist senators in particular were concerned that they would be implicated in the assassinations and were going to great lengths to assure colleagues that their loyalties ultimately lay with the Republic. Ben didn't need the Force to feel alliances transmuting and battle lines being drawn throughout the garden. Senate meetings promised to be utterly cutthroat in the months to come. However, as of the moment, he couldn't care any less. The adrenaline of his plan being set off into motion was fast wearing off, leaving exhaustion in its place. An exhaustion that tinged with a melancholy ache every time he looked at Rey. Still in bodyguard mode, she'd stationed herself at the perimeter of the courtyard, keeping a watchful eye on him. He couldn't very well spend the entire party talking to her, but stars, how he wanted to. You seem a little distracted tonight, my boy. Ben's attention shifted to the woman who had spoken. He automatically leaned down to kiss her cheek in greeting before he remembered where they were and bowed instead.
My lady.
Oh, come now, none of that, huffed Pooja Nabiri, his mother's cousin, drawing him into a matronly hug. Everyone here knows we're related. After that little stunt caster faux pulled a few years back, there's hardly any need to keep it a secret. She was referring to the time Leia's true parentage had been revealed to the Senate, thoroughly damaging her reputation.
I heard from old Dorian that you and your lady friend stayed at the summer house.
Ben blushed. His dignity was no match for the woman who had watched his younger self run around Varrokino in diapers.
She's not. We're not. Ray is my bodyguard.
The words sounded hollow even to his own ears. Pooja quirked an eyebrow, but gallantly changed the subject.
So how are you, Ben? Why are you over here hiding behind the feather ferns?
He grimaced.
Honestly, I've had enough of politics for the night.
She threw her head back and laughed and laughed.
I'll bet all these senators cozying up to you, trying to get back in Leia's good graces. My, how the tables have turned. And yet, it's all so predictable, is it not?
It is.
You're holding up very well, though.
Pooja reached out to pat his cheek.
We are so proud. You look more and more like Anakin as the years pass, but you have my Aunt Padme's grace.
Ben blinked at her. It was slowly, belatedly dawning on him that she'd known them both, that she had memories of them both.
What do you think about it?
He blurted out.
Their relationship, I mean.
Pooja regarded him with a trace of apprehension, as if she knew precisely why he was asking, even if he couldn't admit it to himself just yet. Then she softened and sighed.
I was very young when Aunt Padme died, Ben. Leia and I served together in the Imperial Senate.
We're good friends, and all that time we both had no idea. I was shocked when she reached out to me after the war and told me the truth. She did it mostly for you, you know, to give you a sense of your roots. I've had plenty of opportunity since then to reflect, and you know what I think? We can point fingers to our heart's content, but after this many years have passed, there's no use blaming anybody and casting judgment on what they should or shouldn't have done. At the end of it all, your grandparents were just two young people who wanted to be happy. That's all anyone wants, isn't it? I can only hope that there is a next life, and that there, they found each other again.
The conversation with Pooja was still weighing on his mind hours later as the party was winding down, extricating himself from a cluster of senators where it was painfully apparent that no one was sure if they were making small talk or hurling accusations or negotiating. Ben ducked into an empty stone-paved path, obscured from view by rose trellises on both sides.
Ray followed him, as he had known she would.
Senator? She called out, concerned yet hesitant. He stopped in his tracks and she glided towards him, a vision of ethereal loveliness in the light of the water moon.
Are you all right?
I need you. Ben thought, ached so badly to say. Their time together was almost over, and he didn't want it to be. The band on the gazebo was playing their last song, a poignant melody that drifted through the air like the scent of the roses.
Like a meteor cutting across a starless night, he brightens up my darkest hour.
Dance with me,
Ben said.
Ray gaped at him.
Are you drunk?
He thought about it. He really did.
I've had a little wine.
Ah. She nodded sagely.
But only a glass and a half at most,
he persisted.
I'm not even the slightest bit tipsy, I promise.
Well, sorry, but I skipped the cotillion part of my training.
At least you're aware it's called a cotillion. That's a start.
Before Ray could protest, Ben took her by the waist, pressing one palm to the small of her back, the spot that he had been dying to touch all night. The feeling of her bare skin beneath his fingertips was electrifying, but at the same time, it soothed that part of his soul that was always hungry, that was always searching for more, something, I don't know. She froze in his arms, and it wasn't dancing. Not really.
He was sort of just shuffling her around, and it was so, so awkward, and he didn't care. He would pick this any day of the week over mind games and banal chatter with people hiding ulterior motives behind polite smiles. Finn and Poe were on their way to Leia. The Republic now knew that the First Order meant them harm. Rey had calmed the list of suspicious senators to Luke on Yavin 4. There was nothing more that could be done, and they had what was left of the night to themselves. And so I follow him, like the tail of a comet. I'm just his satellite, never stray into any other orbit, not while he's around. Ben kissed the crown of Rey's head. I don't want a summer romance. He mumbled helplessly into her hair. I don't want just one more day. The things I said to you this morning back in Spinnaker, I was upset by the similarities to my grandparents' situation. I think I panicked a little. A little? Rey scoffed. Your pupils were so huge I could have flown a dreadnought through them. So were yours, he retorted, and then quickly, quietly, apologized for it by rubbing her back, his hand tracing soothing, haphazard circles along her spine. Anyway, my darling. The endearment slipped out, much to his chagrin, but she melted against him, and hope surged in his chest. After you escort me back to New Alderaan, I want to see you again. I want to see you every day, every hour, but you don't have to. I mean, I'm not making you choose between me or the Jedi. I just wanted you to know. It was a far cry from the best speech he'd ever given, he suspected. In fact, it ranked among the worst. But Rey lifted her head to smile up at him, a genuinely sweet, happy smile. It was like watching the sunrise. I feel it too, she said. But I didn't take you up on your first offer because if I had to defy the Jedi Code, it had to be for something that would last. Something worth fighting for. I owe that to the Masters. Ben rested his forehead against hers, closing his eyes. I apologize for that callous first offer. I'll make it up to you, I swear. You can start tonight. In his room inside the royal palace, with the windows thrown open wide to let in the summer breeze and the moonlight and the glow of the fireworks, they carefully undressed each other in the dark. Once the gown fell to her feet in a pool of embroidered shimmer silk, a slow grin spread across his face at the sight of the snow bloom pendant around her neck. The little flower nestled in the dip between her collarbones. It looked good there, the crystalline moonstone sparkling against her golden skin, and he traced its petals with the tip of his finger. I'll wear it every day, Rey promised. A dark, possessive heat coiled through him. His hand continued its lazy trek down her sternum, drifting to the side to cup her left breast. She was so responsive, her nipple hardening beneath the gentlest brush of his thumb. He encircled his free arm around her waist, pressing their naked bodies together, and kissed her fiercely, still fondling her breast, what felt like all of his blood rushing south as she gasped into his mouth when he pinched her nipple between thumb and forefinger. The other one, too, she said against his lips. So bossy. He scooped her up into his arms and carried her to the bed, wasting no time when she was laid out on the mattress in lavishing attention on her neglected right breast with his teeth and his tongue. She whimpered and undulated beneath him, tugging at his hair, arching her spine, and he didn't relent until both her nipples were wet and flushed, until the sound she was making had edged more into pain than pleasure. I want to suck on your tits until you cry, he whispered hoarsely, scattering kisses along the line of her jaw as his hand crept between her legs. Is that very wicked of me? Yes, Rey moaned, her hips canting upwards at the slow, even strokes of fingers that never made it quite all the way inside her, just dipping and teasing. Ben, please, I need to... All in due time, he said with a smirk. Perhaps he was being too smug for her liking because, almost before he knew it, she rolled them over with a surprising burst of strength. Suddenly, he was the one on his back, and she was on top of him, pinning his hands to the sheets as she straddled his hips, her eyes narrowed down at him in a predatory glare. He hadn't expected that his cock would be able to get any harder, but it did.
He was throbbing painfully, fit to burst.
What are you going to do, Ray?
He asked in a soft voice, reaching up to free her hair from its already unraveling twist.
Knock your worshipness down a peg. Don't say it, don't say it. Is that your pet name for my...
Ben! She erupted into peals of embarrassed laughter, her hair cascading down her shoulders in glossy waves.
You're the most infuriating man!
He chuckled as she collapsed on top of him, pressing her heated face to his bare chest. He'd never done this before, laughing with a woman in bed. It was strange and wonderful at the same time. It felt like a gift.
I love hearing you laugh,
he said wistfully, tracing circles on the spur of her hip.
I'll make you laugh a lot. We'll be happy, I promise.
She nodded before stealing the breath from his lungs with an earth-shattering kiss. And from there, it was the simplest and most instinctual of things to push her down onto his length. She was wet enough to take him, but worried that he might hurt her, he rocked up into her with shallow strokes. Even if the sensation of her inner wall squeezing him made all rational thought evaporate, and he had to bite down on the round of her shoulder to stop himself from simply rutting into her like an animal.
Oh, Ben.
Ray sighed, kissing his neck. He could tell that she was uncomfortable at first, but after a few agonizing moments, she began to meet his thrust, and he was able to go a little deeper, a little faster. She really was a quick study.
Ben, Ben, Ben.
I could do this forever, he murmured, his tender tone a stark contrast to the quickening pace of her hips.
Could stay inside you forever, feel you around me always, so tight, so good, my beautiful girl.
Should have known you'd never shut up, she gasped, even in bed. And that was the last sensible thing he got out of her before he clamped both arms around her tiny waist and drove the full length of his erection into her wet heat. She muffled her soft, hoarse scream into the crook of his neck, held onto him for dear life as his hips snapped against hers, as he found a particularly sensitive spot inside her that made her sob out his name. The friction was delicious. The sounds she made were intoxicating, and he couldn't hold out for much longer.
Let me make you come, he grunted. Please, Ray, come for me. That's all I want.
He waited for her to nod, and then he flipped her onto her back once more, dropping sloppy, feverish kisses all over her face as he slammed into her and slipped his hand between their bodies to touch her clit, coaxing her to her peak. She shuddered and tightened even further and fluttered around him, and he was a man unmade, thrusting into her wildly all throughout her orgasm. And then, having only the barest presence of mind, left to pull out. And perhaps it really was wickedness, pure and simple, that made him straddle her midsection between his thighs, that made him slam one heavy palm into the mattress beside her head as he hunched over her, his other hand working himself to completion all over her chest. Thick ropes of cum spilled out from his cock, splattering on the curves of her breasts and the valley between them. A few drops leaking out onto the fine silver chain around her neck as she blinked up at him in the languid daze of her afterglow.
Your worshipness really likes doing that, she remarked. If only it could clean up after itself.
Ben's ears were still ringing, so he wasn't sure at first if he'd heard her correctly. And then he laughed, warm and sleepy and content.
I'll get a towel.
Afterwards, they lay in his bed, his arm keeping her tucked securely into his side and her head pillowed on his chest, the two of them watching through the window as the fireworks cast pulsing beats of emerald and sapphire and ruby and silver all over the rolling floodplains below Theed. Ben knew that they needed to talk about what would happen next, how to deal with the complications that would doubtless ensue, how to handle their relationship in the light of what would be required of them in the months, perhaps even the years to come as they fought side by side against the First Order. But all of that could wait until morning. For now, there were fireworks. There were stars. There was Ray falling asleep in his embrace. And there was Oma Doon hanging in the sky, shedding her pale, cold, benevolent rays over this lush green world where Padme Amidala had been loved so completely and so well, where she had fought for freedom and tried for happiness and left lessons for her daughter's child. Mirror bright shines the moon, Ben thought. Those you loved are with you still. And that old lullaby his mother used to hum drifted up to the heavens and became one with the song of the universe. The end. Thanks for listening.